Now on Mitchell's Front Page, talking freely with Stephanie Asher.
Good morning, Steph. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Mitchell. And yourself?
I'm very well indeed. And just on the way through to talking about the issues of the day, I just wanted to touch on Q&A. I did mention it when I was down at Torquay last Tuesday, but I did recommend it, and it's probably the last time I will recommend something like that, because it was going to be the Feisty Four. But what they did was they took out Barnaby Joyce, because I think he had something else on. They put in Steve Chiobo, who's still interesting, but he's no Barnaby Joyce. And also they put in Lenore Taylor, and she's great, but why did they need a fifth panellist?
That's right. I was very disappointed with that program as well.
I actually yelled at the TV when they said she was going to be on, because I thought, why have you added a fifth panellist?
I didn't have any objection to Lenore Taylor being added, but I must say I wasn't overwhelmed with excitement at what Steve Chiobo produced. I found him to be... I've never taken Valium, but I think I tweeted something along the lines I felt like I had.
Yeah, no, that's true. And we've had Mark Steyn, and I don't think he was given the right topics to shine.
No, and he was allowed an awful lot of airtime too.
Political party donations... I mean, obviously that excites the political class. I know the Greens, I know someone quite high up in the Greens administration. She likes to talk about that a lot. But I don't think it keeps the regular voting public awake as much as talking about the economy and where their jobs are going to come from.
Absolutely agree. Yeah, it's not a very user-friendly topic, is it?
Now, I went to a function that Mark Steyn was speaking at on Friday night, and I tell you what, he was much better than on Q&A at that function. So when he was given a bit more free rein, it was a little bit different, I think.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because maybe it was just the dynamic between the four or the five, or it's a bit like when you recommend a movie or something, isn't it? Everybody's disappointed because the expectations are so high. So.
Always watch something before you recommend it.
Yeah, that's right. Watch it on iView if it's any good.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Now, the polls today, the news poll, which I think is probably the most credible poll in Australia, that's back to 50-50, which means it's pretty much back to where we were almost under Tony Abbott. There was a poll by News Poll under Tony Abbott quite late in the piece that was 50-50. I think right before the Bronwyn Bishop thing happened, but after the last budget. So it's almost like we've just been through a whole year or 9 months of nothing.
That's right. It's very interesting, isn't it? To me, it seems as though the government's thrown away the advantage they had and the opportunity to really present a strong case for discipline and what I think was termed gentle austerity not commentary about
someone
Scott
said Morrison. Some would say that's an oxymoron.
Yeah, true. But, you know, there's ways of framing these conversations, and harsh spending cuts probably won't go down very well with voters, so gentle austerity is probably a little more palatable. But, yeah, it is interesting, and I was particularly interested in the double dissolution conversation over the weekend before that poll came through, because I was interested in the challenge of actually articulating it clearly, and I listened to Anthony Green on the ABC, and I admit I had to actually replay it three times to understand exactly the complexity of it, because, you know, obviously they've got the trigger for the double dissolution, and the dates and the complexity of those, the delivery of those dates was really interesting. So if they did choose to do it, and look, you know, I still think it would be a fairly brave move, but Malcolm Turnbull still does have a significant lead over Bill Shorten in preferred leadership, so if he's ever going to do it, go out, go hard, go early, he could.
That preferred leadership, though, that's not how people are actually going to vote in the ballot box on election day. That's 50-50.
True, but it is the thing that you know, the Liberal Party have gone out on with Malcolm Turnbull, isn't it? And that's the reason Tony Abbott was rolled, essentially. They were claiming that it is all about the leadership. So do you vote for the party leader? Do you vote for your local representative? I always say vote for your local representative, but I think it's certainly in the media discussion, it's all about the leadership.
No, that's exactly right. Double dissolution, they would have to choose one issue that they want to own, and up until this point it seems to have been the Australian Building and Construction Commission. They've said if the Senate doesn't pass that, this is so important that we need to have a double dissolution. And maybe if they time that with releasing the report from the Trade Union Royal Commission, it might actually work.
Yep, absolutely. That would be logical.
It would be logical. Those two issues go hand in hand. But if you look at the polls at 50-50, I don't think they're going to get a much better position than where they were in 2013. At the 2013 election, they got quite a few senators in, especially in Western Australia. They had three Liberal senators in Western Australia. And I'm not sure that they're going to be able to top that, particularly if the polls are tighter than where they were in 2013.
Yeah, that's right. It would be a huge risk, wouldn't it?
They're only a few seats short of actually having a majority in the Senate. But also the minor parties, it's almost like it's being used as a bit of a warning shot to them to say, if you don't support us, we'll kick you out and you will be out of a job.
Yes, absolutely. And the Senate reform discussion is a very interesting one, isn't it?
And we spoke to Senator Glenn Lazarus on this program, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, and he said, I'm supporting Queensland and I don't care if they are going to say a double dissolution. I'm not sure if that's what he thinks privately, but that's what he said publicly on this program. So, yeah, back to 50-50, which means it's fair game. And what Libby Coker said to me on Tuesday really resonated with me when she said it seems like Labor is setting the agenda now. I thought, actually, there's probably some truth to that. When we look at them talking about the GST, that's on the agenda, and negative gearing.
Yes, absolutely agree. It's interesting, isn't it, how it's always the business community that calls for sort of certainty and stability so that they can make, you know, investment decisions and all that sort of stuff. And yet it's the coalition that's keeping us all in a state of limbo. So the tail's wagging the dog at this point. And I think there's no question that the current lack of clarity around where we're going, strategic planning, you know, really, is impacting economy and business confidence. I mean, I look at it and I think, you know, really, the government just has to have the substance, and it's the ideas, the clear policies and a logical, practical plan. You know, it's like, where are we now? Where do we want to be and how are we going to get there? It's strategic planning 101, and we're not getting any of that.
No, we're not. So we know what the pros and cons are of a double dissolution for the government and for the opposition and for the crossbench senators like Glenn Lazarus. What about us here in voterland? How do you see that in terms of, for us, do we have something to gain out of a double dissolution?
I think just avoiding a long, drawn-out campaign, when you said something about it could be as late as January
it
next year.
It could be.
You
know, yep, right, doesn't have to be this year.
Yeah, that's right. 11th of November, I think, was when Parliament sat, wasn't it? 2013.
That's right. But then, you know, they bring it down after that, and then there's the campaign period. So it ends up being about Australia Day next year.
Yeah.
That said, if they did do that, they would have to be campaigning over Christmas, which I'm not sure anyone wants.
No, but then you talk about, you know, nobody wants a winter campaign, and then we've got the Olympics in August.
I want a winter campaign.
Finals in
before
September.
The football finals would be perfect for me.
Yeah.
Then I can go on my holiday in August and all will be well.
You'd know exactly what was happening. Well, interestingly, you know, if the double dissolution did come around, 2nd of July is the first possible date for an election following a double dissolution in May.
Right.
That doesn't backdate the Senate term. So if we had a double dissolution election in the next 5 weeks, which is the earliest possible time, then the Senate terms would have to be backdated. So we'd have another election in 2 years' time. So if the 2nd of July is the earliest date for an election on that basis, then the next election wouldn't be until 2019. So that is all quite clear, and 16th of July is the last possible date on those grounds. And the double dissolution can't be done 6 months in the last 6 months before of the Parliament. So the 11th of May is that date.
Yeah, there. Right.
Now, so if that happened, that would mean that it would be the day after the budget's announced, which means all the finances for the next financial year are under question. Are they going to pass that in one day? No. So if a double dissolution was to be called on that date, they'd need to pass a supply bill to roll over the current expenditure until the Parliament can review it, and that doesn't sit again until August. So there's all of these. It's like this house of dominoes. It's not a house of cards. It's a domino effect, you know, isn't it, really?
It's like the pick-a-path story. There's so many different possible combinations, isn't there?
That's right. Yeah, and so many levels of complexity around how the decision's going to be made, and you sort of think, why don't they just cut through, bite the bullet? That's my sort of style. Cut through, bite the bullet, go early, get put us all out of it.
Out of our misery.
Have it on the 2nd of July and just go hard.
Yeah, at the same time, I think they can't call a double dissolution now before the budget. If they had done one last year, they probably could have got away with it because the polls were so good. But now I think people out there in voter land are starting to wake up to what's going on. So now we actually need to see a budget. And we talked about the budget last year with Joe Hockey, and it needed to be the budget of his life to save Tony Abbott and Joe Hockey. It was a generally well-received budget for the most part, but it ended up not being enough to save them. But this really does need to be the budget of their life, because now they're saying it's all going to be revealed in the budget.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tend to agree with the budget last year. While it got absolutely hammered in the media and it was allowed to be completely picked apart, I think that was mostly around the dancing and the cigar-smoking communication strategy around that. The budget itself was harsh.
Yeah.
And there were some, you know, serious flaws here and there, but essentially it's what was needed, and they just need to go.
Well, I thought with the first budget there was even scope to go a little bit harder, but we keep that on the down low.
Well, that's all part of negotiating, isn't it? You know, you know you're going to go out harder, knowing that you're going to compromise. So, it's a tricky one, but as I've read somewhere, the iron law of politics is when you have the numbers, you use them. And I think Malcolm Turnbull's thrown that away.
And this function on Friday night being for that more right-wing persuasion, of course, Alan Jones was there, and I saw him, and you have to give respect to him, even if you don't agree with him, for the fact that he can get up and speak for an hour without notes. And obviously, when he talks and gets behind an issue, people listen. And a lot of people said we don't like him, but then on Q&A, when he starts talking about fracking, suddenly he's got the other side of the debate captivated as well. But I listened to a particular grilling that he did with the Treasurer on his 2GB radio program. And if he's supposed to be a friend of the government, well, it just shows where are their friends now, because Alan Jones was getting stuck into Scott Morrison and saying, you didn't say anything and we've got no idea what's going on.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? Alan Jones could talk underwater with marbles in his mouth, I think.
Yep.
Whether you like to listen to it or not, I personally don't. But
no.
You're right, he does. He has
it's a style that works in Sydney.
True, and he does manage to colour an argument.
He certainly does. And I spoke to him about it, and he said, oh, it's all a bit of fun.
That's it.
And that's him. That's his typical modesty.
It's a bit of sport, isn't it?
That's right. Now, Cardinal Pell, trial by media. What do you think?
Yeah, look, I'm in furious agreement with you. I feel very agreeable this morning.
That's
good. I don't think it's fair. It's an icky conversation. It's a very important topic, whether you like the man or not. It's probably quite difficult to like the character that we're seeing portrayed at the moment. But yes, there is a process in place called a Royal Commission, so I think leave it to that rather than making slanderous and libelous comments in media.
I know, it's very frustrating when you see that going on, and obviously the Herald Sun says something, therefore, you know, we must go with it. There's allegations, but they haven't been substantiated yet, so we've just got to just chill out and wait and see what actually happens.
Indeed, and I like to listen to the very reasonable voice of Father Kevin Dillon locally. Mm. I think he gives a really good perspective on all things Catholic Church and all things Royal Commission and most things in life, really.
And I describe that song by Tim Minchin, not sure if you saw that, as not very helpful and a bit of personal grandstanding on the part of Tim Minchin. He's obviously taking advantage of the fact that this is an issue and a lot of people are going to like and share that song on social media.
I must say, I just passed me by. I haven't been on social media in the last week or so.
You didn't miss much.
Really? Yeah.
I just watched it yesterday because I thought I'd been hearing about it, but I thought I'd better be across it so I know what to talk about. And I just don't think calling someone a buffoon and scum, I mean, that just doesn't work with me.
Yeah, no, I'm not particularly in favour of that sort of language either in public.
Now, the Drysdale Sporting Precinct, you're quite up with this issue. Tell us about it.
Yes. Now, well, the locals are getting restless when I start getting, you know, emails sent to me by people, hey, how about this? What's going on? I start to pay attention. It just seems that council seems to have been very slow with getting things moving in Drysdale. It was months and months and months ago that we were on this show talking about the money being approved.
Yeah.
And my sources tell me that the response from council has advised that the consultants, architects are being briefed, quote, hopefully by the end of the week. I can also report the council's officially received 50% of the 80% committed state funding, which equates to $1.4 million to kick off the project. And I thought that was a really interesting little phrase, kick off the project, because I'll just read out a little quote from the letter that this is the way local government kicks off a project. I'm being in media and communications.
Yeah, this will be good. Yep.
Kickoffs is usually, you know, balloons and a bit of fun and a bit of energy around it. So, as a result of this funding, quotes have been called for the provision of quantity surveying services and the contract has been awarded. A tender request application has also been submitted and approved to engage a consultant team to undertake, longest sentence in the world, the design process, including bulk earthworks documentation as an early works package and the remainder of the stage one scope of works. Deep breath again. The project brief for this contract is currently being finalised and should be available for distribution to select consultants hopefully next week. So there we go. Nice, succinct and active writing there.
And anyone not familiar with local government would have no idea what they're on about with that.
Basically, they're spending a few weeks putting together a brief to get some consultants in to maybe start something.
But that sounds more like the design phase rather than actually putting bricks and mortar in place and building something.
It's talking about earthworks and a bit of planning. And one of the local people texted me last night, and I thought this was a ripper, and I thought I'll quote her. She said, "Council seems great at approving and allowing very questionable developments that go up at light speed, and yet when they're doing something good for the community, it's a never-ending series of delays and diversions." And I thought, yes, well, that's how the community feels.
Yeah, that's right. This may feel like a question that puts you on the spot a bit, but do you know who the local ward councillor is down there?
Yep, it's Rod McDonald.
Ah,
yeah,
right.
And Rod's been very responsive, and Andy Richards has been very responsive, and the council officers have been responsive to the questions, but it's just the way it all works. You know, drowning in bureaucracy, aren't we?
And it's not their fault, I suppose. They've got to work through the process like anyone else, and I've been to the planning centre down there where people go to have all their planning issues, and I was there to see someone from the council. But I was just listening to the conversations that were being held by the people with the reception staff, and they had things on the screen and they're explaining, and it's very, very frustrating. But planning is an issue that a lot of people have a beef with.
Yes, true. And I think my discovery is that the beef is the inconsistency. I think everybody understands that there has to be due process, and they even will wear the time things take, but it's inconsistent. Some people can get a planning permit in half an hour, quote unquote, and other people it takes 6 months, and that's the thing that gets up people's jumpers.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Also, that leadership breakfast, and we're going to hear your voice very soon as part of the piece that I put together covering that, but what were your takeaways from that leadership breakfast, having the British High Commissioner speak about leadership and transforming Geelong and all that?
Yeah, I thought it was very energetic, very inspiring. It was an interesting break from having sort of, I suppose, a very political conversation at those sorts of functions. They can sort of often be led by state leaders or
that's right,
or people with different discussions, and it ends up being a sort of a laundry list of how much has been spent, and isn't it all wonderful. And Mena Rawlings was, I thought, very inspirational, talking about, you know, you have to know your people to be a good leader, and it was just very grounded in practical answers to things, and she was fielding some incredibly good questions.
I thought
the questions were very, very well constructed. I think I make a comment about that in the little grab that you gave
do,
me,
yes.
Because it was someone's observation about who was putting the questions forward, and they were really good questions and a good range of questions, and it was an interesting format she took. She took two questions at a time and then answered.
I like that format.
I thought
that's
that was
good.
Really good too. I wondered whether she was buying herself time to have a think about the first one while she got the second one, but quite often the two questions were completely different.
They were.
And she managed to answer them really well. And
I think it makes it flow a bit better if we're not constantly pausing for the microphone to go around to someone. And I noticed, of course, Sarah Henderson, the incumbent of Coorangah, might ask a question. So naturally, Libby Coker, who was her opponent, had to put her hand up as well and pose a question. One question I kicked myself for not asking when I left, I thought, what question should I ask of Mena Rawlings? Was, of course, the monarchy versus republic debate.
Yes, well, actually, Libby said that was the question she was thinking. She had two questions she was going to ask, and she asked about the EU instead. I'm glad she did, because I wouldn't really have wanted to hear any conversation about monarchy versus republic here by a British High Commissioner.
I would have just been interested to see what the response would have been. But that would be probably my red-hot issue.
Yeah.
But I care about that a lot more than most people do.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. But also, two things that I really thought were well communicated by the High Commissioner. Number one was, we're focusing on the private sector for growth, which sometimes just gets a bit lost by government. They say, well, this project will create X number of jobs, or this building here is going to create X jobs or bring them down to Geelong. But for every public sector job that you create, you're taking money out of the private sector.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, it was a very good point.
So I thought that was good. The other thing was, of course, spreading the prosperity. You can't have all your growth in London. You've got to use your second cities, and that's what we need down here.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And that was the really good conversation, wasn't it? That regional leadership piece, which was very inspiring.
Very good indeed. Well, thank you so much for coming in once again. I really appreciate it.
Always my pleasure.
And we'll see you next Monday for another fun-filled episode.
Look forward to it, Mitchell.
My pleasure. Stephanie Asher there, talking freely. Well, we will go over to the British High Commissioner now and the piece that I did at the Committee for Geelong Leadership Breakfast. It's 23 after 10.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.